You are now listening to The Crossover.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeli, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good morning to you. Welcome to the Early Morning Scoop. It is a Monday. It is a new, fresh week. My name is Kanjiko Gamekulunkwa Nyoka. And Monday morning, I'll be dedicating 1 hour to joining my colleague. What is the name again, sir?
Thank you for... Thank you for taking that time, because people have been asking, where is Kanjengo, where is Hino, and all those things. But yeah, thank you for joining me. And as it has always been the case, this is Early Morning Scoop, and today in the studio, and it will be the order of any other Monday, we'll be with Kanjoka Mkwanyoka to deal with issues of governance, trade, economics, and everything which is affecting our branded butter.
You know, I love Mondays, even though people don't like Mondays. Yeah. I love Friday. Those are the two most important days.
Yeah.
The Monday, you start off a week.
Yeah.
And the starting of a week is quite critical. The type of direction.
Yeah.
Your preparation, where you plan to go, what you read, what you fed yourself. Because you cannot begin a week without actually recharging, you know?
Yeah.
And recharging is just not about what you eat. It's just not about exercises.
Yeah.
But at the juncture where we are in our economic building journey,
yeah.
we have to recharge in terms of feeding the mind, in
yeah.
terms of the knowledge we accumulate, the type of exposure that we get, the type of research and observation that we make in our economy. So those are very, very critical components when you start a Monday.
Yeah.
And if you start a Monday without feeding your mind, without actually, you know, tapping into that energy, what did you observe?
Yeah.
What did you learn? What are you bringing to the new week? I know in many cases people work in an environment where you just follow procedures, but it's still efficiency, productivity, moving differently, the attitude, your energy, your vibe, you know, it's a new week. So good morning and welcome, colleagues. And have you recharged? What did you feed your mind? What did you feed yourself? How are you going to move this Monday? What are you going to contribute? Remember, we are in an economic journey, right? We are building.
Yeah.
And as you made that introduction that today, we're going to look at something very, very critical. And before we even go in, I said what you read, right? What you fed yourself in during the weekend. And looking at the report, looking at your intro, looking at what you said, this is now where we ask ourselves, what have you read? What have you fed yourself? And how is that now going to shape the conversation for the week?
That's true, because, you know, you cannot enter any conversation, or you cannot go forward with your plans without feeding yourself with right information. Because sometimes people, they are feeding themselves. But what are you feeding yourself with? What are you arming yourself with before we move forward? And in that context, the question of money, the question of financial management is always at the center. Because I've been asking people to say, what are those conversations that we really need to discuss? Do we really need to discuss how much loan are we going to take? Do we really need to discuss things about at what percentage should we borrow? We need to discuss about the sustainability of the economy. Because we can have a very good conversation to say, discuss about finance, discuss about loans, but are we not still at the corner when it comes to the economy? Why can't we discuss about progressive issues?
Yeah.
Just before you go there, I was very happy today, man, to read about Botswana Mining Act, to say they changed their mining act to make sure that government should start buying shares from 15%. Not this thing of discussing 1% and say no, it's a win-win situation. But yeah.
And look.
Yeah.
It's so critical. What are we feeding our mind? Because there is so many conversation that are happening. I was also reading in another newspaper where a person is discussing cybersecurity in Namibia, that it's all about speeches. It's all about conferences and people forget.
Yeah.
And I think it's shaped by how do we want to move forward? Do we want it to stick to the status quo? Because when things happen in Namibia, if you look at the conversation about mental health, cybersecurity, financial management and debt, people just make conferences. And people just make conferences and invite the speakers.
Yeah, yeah.
So now it's about the modality and the approaches that we have in issues that are affecting us. How do we discuss them really? Yeah. And when people are talking about awareness in Namibia or creating awareness or sharing information also, they think when they go to the national broadcaster and you get to be shown in one show, they think we created awareness, you know?
Yeah.
So how deep do we go in issues that affect us today? And one of that issues, like what you have introduced, government decision. And this is actually, I think we need, I'm going to reach out to Brent.
Yeah.
We need to have a deeper conversation because the result of that survey that he did or that they did with his company.
Yeah.
Now I have a question to government. Mm. Which research did they conduct?
Yeah.
For them to dismantle or to temporarily halt the payment deduction, whatever.
The answer is that there's no research.
Now, and this is now what I'm saying. When we are going to start a mandate, we have to be prepared.
Yeah.
We have to feed ourselves with the necessary information to go in a certain direction. Mm. So the starting question, okay, cool. The drama is here. Government decided, we're gonna halt and, you know, stop this payment deduction.
On what ground?
On what ground? And now I just got to realize when I read the report, like, what are they protecting? Like, let us ask ourselves this question.
Yeah.
I have been trying to find a good reason. Like, what is the motive for you to halt the deduction?
Yeah.
Because, okay, cool. I'm the one who borrowed the money, right?
Yeah.
Now, and I gave a concern that I borrowed this money and let the person deduct his money from my salary.
Yeah. Okay, look, concert.
And I want to put this clearly, colleagues. We need to understand something. The economy work within systems. You cannot say, I'm protecting a certain system not to be attached to what? Is it because now the other entity is a private sector? Or, like, I want to understand, who are we protecting when we did this? What is the real issue? I want to understand that. Before, let us just stay there. When we decided no more payment deduction.
Yeah.
Because we are talking about financial management today and the survey that has been released, which was conducted among government employees, their reaction toward the payment deduction decision.
Yeah.
Who are we protecting? What? Maybe I didn't go deeper on this thing. Who are we protecting? What is the rationale behind it?
No, you ask a very good question to say. The first thing that you mentioned, especially with research, on what ground are you making that decision?
Mm-hmm.
And also the question of saying, who are you protecting? Because looking at this system. Looking at the result is saying otherwise, as you have stated. But looking at this system also created the formula to say we are also protecting indebtedness. To say there's 35% minimum take home to say I can withdraw money. I can take loans until a certain extent that I can have something to take home. But to me, I think this one, you're opening.
Now I want to stop you there. How does now you stopping me or the lender?
Yeah.
Deducting prevent debt. That is the linkage I want to understand.
Yeah.
How are you protecting indebtedness or reducing indebtedness? Because you are sending me to the bank.
Yeah.
To say, let your colleagues go to my bank to deduct it from there. Instead of straight to my system where my salary comes from. I wanted to understand, how are you protecting me from indebtedness? Because I'm still going, they are still going to have access to my money through the bank.
Yeah.
So then where? I want to understand the reason. Let us stick there. How are you reducing indebtedness?
No, I think it's a good question. Whatever you do, at the end of the day, money can still come to me. Then I can still use it informally.
Yes.
But I'm also not seeing the point really, but the fact that the research was done after.
Even by them, like this is an individual company. Yeah.
The fact that the research was done after, it also says a lot about the decision that we are taking. That's why we end up, I've been advocating for research and development. I've been advocating for data, but I do not know how is government collaborating with institution which do research. This was even supposed to be a tender of any institution of government.
Yes.
To say, let's do this study. We have this result. Let us implement.
Now, we need to find that Omavindo, because the key question here is that how are we preventing indebtedness? Guys, let us answer this question, because everybody's saying, oh my goodness, such a good decision from government. But you still say that.
Yeah.
Let them deduct it from you through your bank.
There's actually, I'm also not seeing the point. Maybe those from the...
Okay, maybe I'm not enlightened enough.
Yeah.
How? Okay, cool. Yeah. Because before, it was just like a deductible.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the most critical things this company made in there is that, those more than 60% who are against the stoppage are saying it was creating a reliable format of me settling my debt. Meaning my chances of defaulting were minimal. Actually, there were no chances of defaulting.
Yeah.
Now, guess what?
Yeah.
Now, guess what? I'm now going to default.
No, now you are going to the
colleagues. What did we create?
Now we're going to the shark street.
These colleagues owe more than 2 billion or 3 billion.
Yeah.
Back then, they were unable to default because the deduction was straight. It was like a tax deductible.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
just a deductible.
Yeah.
So meaning there was no slight chance of them defaulting. Now guess what? We gave now the power to say, yeah, pay if you can pay. So meaning when the money reached the bank, they have already paid it that and then. And this type of loans are perhaps not prioritized. How many of them are going to default? Now, what have we created?
No, I want to say the rationale, because when you look at the results of the report or the result of that study, saying most employees expect negative consequences if the system end. 83% foresee more difficulty in keeping up with payment. 70% believe access to loans will be worsened. 71% fear that debit order fee will make payment too costly. Only 15 believe their situation will improve. And these statistics are very interesting also. And you will also be able to see the demographic of Namibian people in this study. Do you know that numbers can tell you a lot of things?
Colleagues, I'm puzzled.
Yeah.
I'm puzzled when we make a policy decision where you have 79% of people who favored. And you have 72% of employees say the PDM helped them avoid taking more debt.
Yeah.
And you have a 64 as good, very good for them personally. And you have 74% agreed that PDM make it easier to manage their monthly finance. Colleagues, what have we created? How many, if you look, and I'm going to say this. Look.
Yeah.
You have two systems that were working. You have two systems that were working together. A private one and a government one.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to bring in also the concept of jealousy. Are we jealous to a certain extent? And again, and I'm going to throw this in. Whenever there is arbitrage is when there is an opportunity to make a profit.
Yeah.
People make profit. And don't blame them for making profit. Because you have your weak governance structure in place, you're going to blame those who are going to utilize and take advantage of arbitrage. Now, what have we created? And I'm going until I go at 7 o'clock. I'm going to keep asking you this. You have people who owe 3 billion.
Yeah.
And here you are not only putting at risk the companies and the lenders who gave the money.
Yeah.
You are also putting these people in trouble.
No.
So you have two people that you have literally destroyed at this particular point. These people, and we are saying access to finance. I enabled your people to access money to me.
You know, it's very interesting also, because this question of accessing to finance, there is always a discussion and a debate about financial access and also knowing how to use money. There was a manager for, FLA, Financial Literacy Initiative, Tate Konjeni. Then I asked a question during that conversation. I just asked a question to say, Namibia, we've been talking a lot about financial literacy and also the content of financial literacy. I just say, no, was there any research done on the effectiveness on the content of financial literacy? Because people are continue teaching us financial literacy, but when it comes to behavior change, it's like there is nothing. Then, you know, the answer was very interesting to say, no much really change in terms of the content. How come you are not changing the content of your education that you are giving out?
If you expect people to change their behavior.
Yeah.
And again, the word effectiveness, do we measure it? Do you understand it? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm emphasizing this point that, colleagues, when we are making policy decision, and this is where now, I don't know whether Tate Umavindu is involved into this, Madam Shafut is involved into this, and because now all these people are new. And I also read something that the Statisim also wrote that he was so advocating for this. But where is the research? Who are we protecting? And I'm emphasizing this number, sir. Yeah. You have 3 billion.
Yeah.
Owed.
Yeah.
By these individuals.
Yeah.
Now, you are building an economy by destroying entities.
Mm.
And this is you destroying entity because this company or these companies trusted you to operate in a certain manner.
Yeah.
You said we should enable access to finance. And I'm telling you, in other economies, small loans are the big deal now. Small loans and small lenders, they are actually where our people can access finance because nobody's able to afford getting 1 million.
Yeah.
And we are doing smaller businesses because the micro lending space, just because we have a narrative of how bad they are, the micro lending are the one that are making significant changes. If you even read one of the story in the Villager today about the Brazilian market, about the fintech and others that are actually competing with the banks, is the micro lending spaces that are actually enabling access to finance. Just because we have not taught our people to use this money wisely, or to borrow productively, we are now blaming the micro lending spaces.
And actually they are the one which are connecting the majority of the people to finance.
You know
what is very interesting?
Mm.
When I used to hear about Namfisa, the only thing which I can relate to is micro lenders.
But in a negative, right?
Yeah, not in a negative form, but what is very interesting is that when we discuss about this non-banking financial asset.
Yeah.
The only thing which is connecting the majority of Namibians to that Namfisa is micro lending.
Even if it's 7 billion asset, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Even if it's when it comes to the portion which is controlled by Namfisa, it's little. Is the only thing that is connecting.
And many Namibians.
And what is very interesting is that Dr. Staitler gave a presentation indicate to say. When it's coming to the system, people do not want the system to go. They want the system to be improved.
Yeah.
People just want access to reliable finance and all these things. Not really to say whether the system should go or not. People just want improvement of access to finance and also how to use their money. That is exactly what
I said. And actually, the system didn't do anything. Do you know that?
Yeah.
The system didn't do anything. It protected the lender.
Yeah.
It protected the individual. Mm. This system was was one of the most important assets between these two entities. And we are destroying it because, and I'm going to bring in Namfisa here.
Yeah.
We are now blaming the two entities, the micro lenders. Yeah. Oh my goodness, they are lending to our people.
Yeah.
Do you know that I never seen Endrepo advertising? I never seen Letseho advertising. Back then,
yeah.
I never seen them persuading people to say, come and borrow money.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
Then how come are we blaming them for people borrowing? How do we say that, oh my goodness, they're indebting our people? How?
Mm.
So it's like our people are these kids. Do you know that most of the people in government have degrees and diplomas, right?
Yeah.
Then how come we are talking about them like they are little kids or like these people that are not so economically enlightened?
Yeah.
How are we blaming the lender for indebting people? I'm failing to find the connection here.
You know one thing which I think about, ne? Because especially this case of talking about people who took a loan that they cannot afford.
Mm.
The discussion that we need to look at is that let us fix the economy.
Mm.
Because you already know that in a black culture, for example, when you are the only person who is working in government, that is not your money. Mm. Don't even boast about that because everybody who is in that family will make sure that they come to you and they look for assistance. Some people, they even end up taking loans that they are not benefiting from because that is the only way that these people can access money.
Mm.
But for us to limit this discussion, we're supposed to fix the economy itself.
Yeah.
Because for you to say, no, people are borrowing money and they are not using the money responsibly or they are attacked by
loan sharks. I find it a bit shallow.
Yeah. No, it's a shallow conversation because have you fixed the economy? Have you allowed people to participate in the economy?
Yeah.
It's going to be more easier.
Yeah. Did government improve people's salary? Because look, one of the issues that we have is a sluggish and stagnance of wages.
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last time did they increase people's salary? Do we, like, do, can we have a broader view of why people are borrowing?
Mm.
The cost of living, the basket of goods. Look, I, when I came into Windhoek, I was renting in the house of a cleaner.
Yeah.
Yes, because they had access to houses back in the colonial time.
Okay. Okay.
So this meme, her salary is around 4,000. Like, I think it's, yeah, when is it that's overtime?
Okay. Okay.
And she's a cleaner in government.
Yeah.
And she has a house that has tax and rates. Then how, like, how do you expect? And that's why it puzzles me. People are shifting the blame to people who are borrowing.
Yeah.
When you are paying somebody who's living in Windhoek 4,000.
Yeah. No, like, it's very expensive.
That's what I'm saying. The shallow, the conversation is so shallow that we are blaming people for borrowing. Look at the cost of living.
Mm.
Look at the average wages of a Namibian.
Mm.
If you then contextualize the things, you cannot push the blame to people who are borrowing. Yes, most of we dudes, we borrow for different reasons. But if we add women to that,
yeah,
then it means that it's just that people cannot afford to live. The wages are unable to afford the people, just the basic life.
Yeah.
So I think we need really to contextualize things when you're saying people are borrowing.
Yeah.
And I think we really, really need to stop blaming the lenders for occupying such a space.
Yeah.
And again, one of the most critical things that you are passing on to the lender, yeah, where is the regulator? Where is the governance structure and the framework? Are we now saying, because nobody's saying that Letsego has broken the rules.
Yeah.
And Repo has broken the rules.
Mm.
Does anybody has proved that, okay, they were lending to people reckless? Nobody's saying that isn't.
No.
Then if that does not exist, why are we blaming them for occupying a space that enables people to access and to complement their salaries?
You know, sometimes I ask myself to say, sometimes we are dealing with a result of something that we are supposed to fix for quite a very long time.
And again, what are you fixing again?
Yeah.
Mm.
Because let me take you a little bit out from this conversation.
Mm.
I had a discussion with somebody when we were speaking about this thing of GBV.
Mm.
And I understand that we have different views about it.
Mm.
And particularly those with feminism ideology, which I respect so much.
Mm.
To say, no, men are monsters.
Why are you shielding yourself?
No. Mm. Men are monsters. They do A, B, C, and D. But I brought the conversation to say, sometimes let us look at the root cause.
Mm.
It could be also the impact of the economy.
Mm.
Do you know that the drought itself can cause instability in the country, just drought itself, or these issues of food insecurity.
Mm.
But I say, no, sometimes things start with the economy.
Mm.
When the economy is not fixed well, some people end up strategically in the relationship, not really because they want, because of the economy, they want to survive.
Mm.
And it will lead to this thing of gender-based violence. Instead of just saying, you know, all men are monster and do this thing and this things. But did you really go and ask to say, why are we dealing with this problem?
Mm.
Is it a behavioral thing?
Mm.
Or there is something, because the more you have poverty, the more you have also this
high level of frustration.
Frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even indirect cause. And the people, yeah.
Yeah. We barely contextualize the things in Namibia. We just rush. And I'm going to reach out to Dr. Omavindu so we can have a conversation with this.
Yeah.
What are we achieving when we are stopping this system?
Yeah.
Because there are two critical things in that report that are very, 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 I'm worried. When there is 80 billion of asset,
yeah,
of financial asset or money owed to the micro lenders.
Mm-hmm.
And one of, do you know when we call it is secure lending and unsecure lending?
Yeah.
When it's secure lending because there is an asset backing it up, meaning there is a collateral. Even if you default, I'm able to take your asset.
Mm-hmm.
That's a collateral.
Mm-hmm.
But in the micro lending space,
yeah,
there we call them unsecure.
Yeah.
And again, do you know why the interest rate of micro lending are higher than the banking one?
Mm.
Because they are unsecure.
Mm.
Because there is no collateral.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do not know when you are going to come and pay back. So the risk between you paying,
you can lose any time.
So that high interest rate is a reflection of how risky borrowing or lending to you is.
Yeah.
That's why now we are, even there are some suggestions that we should cap the interest and things like that.
Mm.
But people need to understand, why do microlending charge such a type of interest rate?
Mm.
Why? Because this is unsecure lending. There is no collateral. Now, the collateral, the invisible collateral that was there, It was debt deducting system from government. Nobody's telling us that, but I'm telling you that was the most critical asset.
Yeah.
And that made microlending so secure for government employees. Because if you go in their, on their financials.
Yeah.
Nobody will give them money. Nobody will give them money because look at them. They are cars. They have cars. They have houses. Almost they have nothing.
No, actually nothing. And you gave a very good example of a cleaner to say sometimes a person, when you are growing up, you have responsibilities. But when you are looking at a cleaner, for example, and that person is also family to take care, you have a house, you have other bills, then you find the person during the, on payday, person is already out. There's actually no money, not really because the person did not work for money, just because he or she is overpowered by the bills around that person. That's why in most cases people survive on loans to maintain them to reach to another month, which is quite a very critical thing to look at.
And now, and I'm repeating this again, secure lending and unsecure lending. What made the micro lender comfortable to lending it to your government employees was access to that system.
Yeah, because the system is also calculating.
Yes.
It's calculating.
It was the most, is what made them comfortable. Now, if now the micro lender are no more comfortable to lend to government employees, how are they going to survive? And I'm telling you this, that they were secure or they were comfortable to give this much money to government employees because they had access to that system that made sure these people pay. But now we are actually criminalizing the micro lenders for using something concrete like that to enable access to finance. And this is where you can see that many of our Namibian people and our leaders, and I'm going to insult them in this way, they are not economically enlightened. And they do not understand why was that system critical to your people who are earning 4,000. Because nowhere they can go, they will get money. Now, nobody will give them money. And how will they survive?
And also, how are you going to implement your what?
Access to finance.
Access to finance, but there is a financial sector transformation strategy. Yeah. What a very, very brilliant plan by BON.
Who is going to give the money when they look all this unbankable?
Have you read that? Have you seen the targets?
I've
asked Dr. Seta to say, are these targets not of ambitious, you know, but he gave a very diplomatic answer to say, no, they are not, as long as we are improving it, you know, but I wanted to get something to say.
Concrete.
Yeah, concrete answer, because when you are saying by 2035, more than 60% of the informal sector will have access to former financial, institution to get fund.
Which one?
I don't know.
Which financial institutions?
I don't know how those things are going to work.
Let them go. And this is why I keep saying. And the thing is written by people who are very much enlightened.
Yeah.
It was drafted by Bank of Namibia and Amphis and others. These are people that are enlightened.
Yeah.
The Cecilia who are in charge of it are economists with master degrees.
Yeah.
But the key question is here. Look, I'm a practical person.
Yeah.
I wanted to go look at the risk assessment template of any bank. What do they look at? What do they look at? And I'm emphasizing this point. What made Entrepo and Letsego micro lending side to be comfortable to lending to government employee is because there was a system that was protecting them. And that is the most important asset that enabled both of these entities to lend capital. Or to enable capital. Now you have destroyed it. And when you have destroyed it, you are coming up with now a booklet that says we're going to enable access. Where are you going to enable access? Your people are over debted already. Your people have no, look, they have no financials or they have no income that will enable them. Because if you look at the cost of food, if you look at the cost of transportation, if you look at the cost of education, colleagues in Windhoek, or anywhere.
Yeah.
Because now we are moving our kids from public, because public is a mess. We are now taking them to private sector.
Yeah.
You pay 300 per month. You pay 300 for material. Like in school alone in a month. If your kid's at a private school, you spend like probably 1,000 or more.
Yeah.
Now the cheapest. Now, even in the public school now, If your kid is now you stay, and remember the schools are not in Katutura.
Yeah.
The kids can walk, so you have taxi money. You have a kabaki.
Yeah.
The buses don't come. The municipal bus are always late. They cannot take kids at school.
Yeah.
So even at the public school, because now we are also buying books, you also are spending around 700 already. So when the cost of living is like this, these people, their income go into consumables. So even if you say, let them start a hustle, let them start a tax shop, they can't. And even if now they go to the bank even to look for startup capital, nobody will give them money because they have nothing that left on their salary. And you are dismantling the space where they can actually access small capital. The micro-lending space now globally is where you can enable these people with lowest income and little gaps of space within the income statement to access. Mm. And you are dismantling them. And you are actually making them villain. Instead of pulling them closer to bridge the gap in terms of financial access. That's why I'm like, I'm puzzled by how we move.
No, it's actually, you know, it's a very interesting point because you cannot develop by cutting out those, especially we are speaking about, it's like you're speaking about informal sector because those who are at the edge of a salary scale with responsibility and they want to expand. Mm. But when you are cutting them out, how are they going to survive moving forward?
Mm.
And also the question of research to say, is that decision made by just one person or is the decision influenced? Because if you have something like this, which is already proposed, then you have results which are saying otherwise, which means that the employees are still going to fight you. Yeah, they are still going to fight you because when they realize that now there is no protection anymore.
There's no protection. There's no access, guy.
Yeah.
You are sitting with the financial strategy.
Mm.
The financial, whatever national financial strategy in place.
Mm-hmm.
The key question, who is going to assist you to enable access? When you are criminalizing and you are villain, what is the word? You are making micro lenders villain. Who is going to assist the government to enable access to finance? The banks can't. No, the banks can't. How long did they take actually to agree to reduce their margins?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how are you going to tell them? How are you going to tell them to enable access to somebody who get 10,000, but at the end of the month, they are just left with 2,000?
Mm.
What loan will even they take?
With minus 2,000.
With minus 2,000. Where are they going to get money?
Mm.
Because the system that exists, it made payment of loans as a deductible. Meaning before you go spend on your beer, you already settled your debt.
Mm.
But now you've given these people flexibility to spend on beer first before they settle their debt. And now the micro lender also going to sit back to say, more than 100 employees in our public sector, they are too risky to give money.
Yeah.
Then what will happen to your access to finance?
No, then you are out.
You are out.
No,
we had something that we can use to enable access to finance.
Yeah.
Like what he's been saying in that study. Mm. Nobody's actually saying that system was bad.
Yeah, nobody said. And the other thing is also that something that we need to work on is we speak more about access and financial capability and financial literacy. That is something that we're supposed to work on. That's something that we're supposed to work on because if you are
understanding money,
that is a problem because if now a person is going to, people are now going to be forced to go now informal.
Mm-hmm.
They are now going to go deep to handle cash on their own.
We are going to fight one another, my guy.
No, it's going to be chaotic.
It's going to be chaotic because these people are not going to pay. And we are repeating this. The system enabled you to go deal with your beer issues and settle your loan, your liability first. That is how bad karma the system was. And I'm repeating this again.
Yeah.
The system enabled the public employees to prioritize their liability before beer or before anything else, which is luxury. That was the comfort. Now you gave these people a chance to go choose beer before they pay their liability.
It's going to be chaotic.
Now, You have actually discouraged the micro lenders participant to give loan to these people. Because the behavioral issues of Namibian is that they don't care about liabilities. That is the thing. They don't care about liability. Come and take my house, or come and take my sofa if you want your money.
Yeah.
Or come beat off your money.
Yeah, I can beat off your money.
But it doesn't work like that. The micro lender can beat you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have no asset for me to come and forfeit as a collateral.
So they are also not,
they have nothing.
There's no security on the other side.
There's no security. The only security was the system that the access.
Uh-huh.
That was the only security that exists. And we dismantled it by political statements.
No, I hear you.
Now, how are they going to, even now the micro lender are going to say no to them?
Because this was a guarantee to say,
that was a guarantee.
Nino will get, I'll get my $20 from
you. I'll get whether Nino choose not to pay or not.
Yeah.
The system will make sure I access my money. That was the security. That was the security. But we are having a lot of political statement around real issues. Now we are making these people to join in the rest of Nino cannot get loans. Because I'm not in government.
Yeah.
I have no access to that system.
Yeah.
I have no collateral.
Yeah.
Literally, all I get is my beer money.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah.
I'm stuck in Katutra where I rent. Mm-hmm. I cannot start my tax shop. I cannot buy my 3 goats or my 4 goats.
Yeah.
Because this is the thing. If I buy a 3 goat,
yeah,
I cannot put a pump. You see? And this is the cycle. If I put a pump, mm-hmm, I cannot afford the goat.
Then you're not going to eat also.
Then when I eat, you see, there is a cycle of pain. If you go for the other will not exist. And if you buy this one and you cannot feed it,
mm-hmm,
you lose money.
You know, financial.
Do you ever wonder why we have so many road rules? Like, don't jaywalk, don't drink and drive, don't drive with underinflated tires, and don't speed. It's because we don't want you to put your life at risk. Don't become a statistic. Don't become a headline. Be a responsible road user. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katutura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katutura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
So David, here is the context of things.
Yeah.
Here is the context of things.
Mm.
And I keep repeating this word. Mm. In our journey to build an inclusive economy, the word inclusive. Now, when you look at that, when we dismantled something that was pro-poor, I'm going to call it a pro-poor. That was one of the best systems that we have.
Yeah.
But because we have a problem with certain people benefiting in situation, we get to be very reactive and very, very negative towards something.
Yeah.
And I'm repeating this again. Colleagues, in an economy, those who have eyes are going to take advantage of arbitrage or opportunity to make money.
Yeah.
What you need to do as a government, you have to strengthen your regulatory framework.
Yeah.
That's why I'm telling people, did you guys ever think of NAMFISA roll into this? Why are you pointing fingers to Entrepo to Letejo?
Mm.
Did they break any law? No. And I'm going back to the point that I made. Have you ever seen them actually advertising?
No, don't advertise.
I actually didn't know where, and I'm going to, I hope I'm not saying anything negative. I didn't know where Entrepo office was.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
Until I just saw a building written, because they do not advertise. And now when it comes to the issue of indebtedness, whom do we blame?
Yeah.
And do we have to blame somebody, or do we have to reflect that why are our people running to cash loans? Is it to supplement their income?
Yeah.
Is their income that low?
Mm.
Is it just because they, and you cannot tell somebody to manage 4,000 salary in Windhoek. Like I tell people, I'll literally get angry at you if you tell me, Gabriel, just manage your wages. Dude, you cannot tell me to manage 5,000 in Windhoek. What will I manage?
Mm.
What will I even save? And it means a person like does not understand. I stay in Katutura.
Yeah.
Look how far we stay to come to Clean Windhoek.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Look at the tax that we pay.
Mm.
You know, look at, just look at everything that we pay.
Mm.
And for somebody, you have just to save even, $100. My guy, do you understand the cost of living?
You know, I call it an advice of 1% who standing at the vantage point.
Mm.
You know, some people, you give advice without really know, what we are speaking about, especially when it comes to the issue of finance.
Mm.
You can have 20,000, you can have 30,000. Mm. What are your responsibilities? Because the situation of the economy that you are in a country, can it also manifesting in your family, for example,
mm.
to say, if Ngino is the only person who is in this family,
mm.
no matter how powerful you are, no matter your position, you are still going to suffer
mm.
like somebody who is not getting anything because mm. a lot of people, they are going to depend on you and they don't have any choice
mm.
because of the situation that we are in right now.
Yeah. And yeah. given our cultural matters,
yeah.
I support an extended family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And look, you know, people sometimes look at me like, why don't you attend the family weddings, all these things? Dude, when I look at those young ones, then this one does not have shoes. This one does not have a bag.
You have to give them everything.
Yeah. When I went to a wedding, yeah. I went to a wedding, last month.
Yeah.
One with my traveling bag, a dope bag.
Yeah.
And when the wedding is done, one of the kids, one of my niece, or I don't know, his village people, the kids are a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is going back to the hostel.
Yeah.
And just getting, I think, just in plastic. And it had so much.
Yeah.
So I give up my bag. Yeah. So I put my clothes in my cooler bag. So, so when I traveled back, I was carrying my cooler bags all the time. People are looking at me like, yeah, during the, bro, you're just carrying a cooler bag.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have to go back to Winuka. I had something to go do in Oshkuku.
Yeah.
So I've been carrying my cooler bags there. Uh-huh. People are asking like, oh, what is in the cooler bags during the week, bro?
Yeah.
Like, there are my clothes.
Yeah.
And it just magnified that there is so much that we have to do due to our cultural upbringing, the support that we have to do.
Mm.
Now, my finance will not enable me to buy all those kids' hostel bags, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if I have to do it, it means I have to get a loan or something like that.
Mm, mm, mm,
otherwise, mm. I just have to watch the situation.
Look, January is coming.
And January is coming. Yeah. Now, mm. if we can actually go in those loans that these people took,
yeah.
And we categorize them. What type of loans?
Yeah.
What was the reason? And actually, there was a small survey done by Cyrus Capital.
Mm.
That why are people borrowing?
Mm.
And people are mentioning food.
Mm.
People are mentioning transport. And that there is a policymaker. So I don't want to call them so shallow enough.
Just basics. Needs.
To tell people that are indebted. Oh my goodness, is the microlender. When people are borrowing for food.
No, when you're borrowing for food, you don't have any option.
The survey was done. I saw it on LinkedIn. I saw that they did some beautiful paragraph where they are giving reasons why people are borrowing. And now we are here blaming a system that enabled people to borrow for food. I then, colleagues, then there's something wrong with us. If you hear that the people are borrowing for food, and the only comfort that they gave the microlender to give them money is the access to the system that enabled deduction.
No, you,
and now you dismantled it.
No, you mentioned a very important thing, especially when you spoke about what is the law saying about micro lenders? Did they commit any crime? And the other thing is also bridging the gap between the poor and also financial access.
Mm.
To say the system can only allow somebody who is legally registered, who went through NAMFISA already, and all these things are already covered.
Everything
now,
is checked.
Now the question is, why are you doing it?
Yeah. If NAMFISA said, okay, cool, I approve this
college. A certain percentage.
Yes.
You are not going to take everything.
No.
You are also calculated to say no, here until here.
Yeah. So that's why I'm puzzled, colleagues. What?
No, I did not see the point. I don't see the point.
I'm so puzzled. That's what I'm saying. Let us get that Umavindo in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Even that the Shimi, because he said, I was an advocate for this. What is the issue?
Yeah.
And if there was an issue, was it the issue with the micro lending or was it with NAMFISA or didn't do their job?
Mm-hmm.
Because all these colleagues, there is a micro lending act.
Mm-hmm.
There is a micro lending act. And is it being implemented like it's supposed to be? Then we can say the micro lending are breaking the law. But if it's being implemented, then why are we blaming them? Is it, if there is a problem or a gap or a loophole, why don't we amend it?
Why can't we fix it?
Why can't we fix the law itself? And you, Minister of Finance, deal with NAMFISA. That NAMFISA, why are you standing with an outdated law until now? And this law is actually subjecting our people to this and this.
You know, the bottom line to me, I think, let us look at the bigger picture and look at why people are doing that. People are doing that because they do not have anything. People are doing that maybe because of their family. People are doing that for their partner.
For the bad economy, which is not rewarding.
Yeah.
The Namibian economy is not rewarding. You can work hard.
Mm.
People say, we are working hard in the wrong country. When you have an economy that does not reward. Look, even the system of government, people work in government.
Mm.
There is no rewarding system. They just have salaries.
Mm.
Like you have a better performer. How do we reward people in government?
Mm.
If government can come to us and tell us that we reward the people also, because people are going to be motivated.
Yeah.
Because they know if we put on extra effort, we will get rewarded. Our salary, you get something for doing this and this. And my income will improve. Mm. There is nothing like that in government. If there is something, let them come and tell people, look, if you have an economy which is not rewarding, if you have a public sector which is not performance oriented, then you expect the people to lose hope. Because I know until I'm 50 years, my salary is going to be 10,000 while I'm working in government.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these people now are in their 40s that are in government.
Yeah.
And even if you add perhaps a diploma, your chances of being promoted to something are very minimal. Imagine those in education when you are a teacher.
The line is long.
The only next option is HOD, but how many schools need HODs?
No, just look at your class at university. Mm. How many of those one are going to be? I asked this, how many are going to be HOD? How many are going to be school principal?
Yes.
Then they only maybe 2% become inspector. Then one lucky one become a director at your generation. What are you going to do?
So meaning that? There is no progress. They will be stuck there.
Yeah.
But the cost of living is increasing.
Yeah.
So now, then we blame indebtedness on people.
Yeah.
Rather than on the structural issue of our economy and the structural issues of our employment performance and how we structure them.
Mm.
If the people's salary are so sluggish, we call it the sluggishness, meaning they do not move with prices.
Yeah.
And the cost of living keep going up. How do you expect the people to complement their goods and their need? And people are now telling, oh my goodness, we need to scale back. Mm. So now I must move back to a ghetto. Because now rental in window gets started from 1.5. Yeah. Whether it has a toilet or it doesn't. Whether it's in a crappy room anyway in Greenwell, it will start from 1.5.
Yeah.
Now, and it keep increasing. Actually, do you know that they don't do anything to this room? They don't paint it. There is nothing.
Yeah.
But they keep increasing the rental. Now, I'm a teacher.
Yeah.
Things keep increasing.
Yeah.
How do you, and there is no chances of me getting anything else from elsewhere.
Yeah.
Unless I start a side hustle, but a side hustle require capital.
Yeah.
How do you expect me to complement? And we are here blaming people for indebtedness. We need to blame the structural issues of our economy.
Mm.
We need to blame the system that we have in place that reward people that does not reward at all.
Yeah.
So we need also to enable people to access hustling capital, small capital. And this small capital exists within the micro lending space.
Yeah. And that is what keep money circulating also in the economy. You know, But with data and with also those who are in charge of policy making, I think data should also be emphasized. Data and the research should be emphasized more, because if you are making a decision based on data, because data do not have emotion. They will just tell you to say, this is what people are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
This is what people are doing every month.
And this is what people are going through.
Yeah, this is what people are going through. And there you can make a decision.
Yeah, when you have policymaker, and I keep saying this.
Yeah.
Somebody raised a very beautiful point that how do you expect a person of grade 12 who's running a council hour to operate a certain level? And you look at our parliament, and I'm so angry when I look at our parliament, I listen to them.
Mm.
They are just making political statements.
Yeah.
They are making statements in a house where they're supposed to come up with suggestion and proposal and they debated them.
Yeah.
And then you have them actually reacting like that to such a type of things, blaming a system instead of actually having a holistic picture. How is the situation of your economy? What is the root causes that is pushing people to go here? And every month at the cost of doing things, colleagues, 700 right now, I usually to buy my food with 700.
Yeah.
Now I can carry them in a plastic with one hand.
My brother.
Then colleagues.
And I also think those who, especially the policymakers, especially when it's coming to the issue of economy in general, just fixing the economy, we must move beyond debating. And when we are debating, at least we must have something that is concrete to say, you know, data are saying this, this is what we are going to do. Which law are you going to amend? And what benefit are you going also to, to what is going to come from that law that you are amending or that law that you are coming up with? Because I'm also trying to see what is a differentiating factor between the previous administration or the current administration, especially when it's coming to lawmaking and also deal with the economy. Or some people are saying it's too early to judge to see. There are some movement. I'm seeing some movement, but where are we? What are we achieving?
Yeah. So and context is very important in policymaking.
Yeah.
Let us not, and that's why I'm emphasizing, when there are policy consultation happening in the public, I really encourage people to go. But unfortunately, I'm also starting to not to blame people anymore for not attending, because the people are so busy hustling, bro. Now you have to, you choose luxury to go complement the policy or to sell. So, but I'm encouraging those who get the chance to go, and when laws are being reviewed, so we go. Because now we are giving this power to policymakers. And look at our policymakers within parliament, and you look at them and like, And the statement that they are making and the motion that they are supporting, then we are in trouble. So now it's very, very critical. I see. For me now, it's 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I have to make my conclusion, I think, after this advert quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Electoral Commission of Namibia reminds all registered voters, November 26, 2025 is the day to cast your vote. Head to the polls and exercise your democratic right by voting. Your vote is your voice, so put your voice in the box to make sure it's heard. Vote on November 26, 2025.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of.
Look, like what I said.
Yeah.
Context is very, very important in economic building. And the term economic building, the term inclusiveness, the term access are very important. And if we are going to build a better, and I keep using the word the better, we have to change the foundation. We have to change the structural issues that exist. We have to do more research. We have to be well informed by really real and practical situation. That's why I urge sometimes that politicians, I just want you to go spend time in Havana.
Yeah.
I just want to go at the four-way. One day, spend your whole day there.
Yeah.
Go to a Kulyangava open market. Go to a certain village. Go to a certain village. And get to understand the real situation, so that how you reason and the type of motion you support have context. And also let us take time to study things and understand the causal relationship in matters and variables. Because if you listen to this issue of this system, you can see there are a lot of people that are not well enlightened about how it works. We have a lot of people who are not well enlightened about micro-lending. We have a lot of people who do not understand the current strategy of access to, or whatever, financial access. They did not even read. Then you now have them saying in that strategy, we are going to enable access. If you ask them how, which institution are you going to work with when you are dismantling systems? So there is so much chaos in our policy space. There is so much chaos in the decision that we are making, because we are not guided by data. We are not guided by the practical situation that our people are going through. And we are not deliberate and intentional enough. David, I have to leave you with that. If we are going to move forward building a different economy that enable and that include everybody, we have to be more enlightened. When I say enlightened, it's not about going to church and pray. Enlightened about the practical situation your people are going through. You have to be enlightened about the system that are in place. You have to understand the banking. You have to understand if, when we say financial access, when we say investment access, When we say we want to enable our people to do things and we do the opposite, we have to be able to do analysis to see what is the impact. We have to do simulations, run numbers. Simulations are very, very important because you have to include every variable, every component of your population. You do need to do simulations. What is the impact? Because right now we are just moving and moving and moving and making statements. So, colleagues, thank you so much for the Monday. And as I say, Monday is a very important day.
Yeah. And thank you for setting that tone. Mm-hmm. And starting at a very good note. Mm-hmm. So it's very important. You can define the future and all those things.
And what do we feed ourselves with? What are we reading?
Yeah.
What are we listening to?
Who do you talk to?
Who are we talking to? Yeah. What are we spending our time doing? So it's very, very important on how we start the week. So thank you so much, colleagues. Eagle FM. Let us take to the core of things. And there is no economic building without information. Access to the right information will enable people to participate. But if they do not have access to dialogues, access to simplified things, I don't think they are going to participate. So with that, colleagues, my time end here.
Yeah.
David will continue the early morning scoop. Stay tuned and please participate. Dialogues need to happen. Let us ask all those questions. Let us ask all those questions and participate in dialogue that can shift how we think and how we do things.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.6.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Chombeye, where he unpacks global affairs, analyzes issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism. Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yes, thank you, Nino, for joining me. And we are continuing with the Early Morning Scoop. We're discussing about the issue of payment system. We're discussing about the issue of payroll deduction system that is connecting the poor to the micro lenders, and also to see what informed the decision. We also look at the context of data, because we are always indicating to say data don't lie. If you invest in research, if you invest in statistics, and numbers can tell you a lot of things to say. If you have contacted the research to say why everybody is running to micro lenders, why everybody is running to cash loans, and you look at what are they spending money on, and also at what statistics, at what level are these people borrowing money, and what are they spending them on? Then you look at the whole economic structure of the country. Then you'll be able also to understand that when you are making your decision, you are inclusive, and you are also, including those who cannot sit on the table, because, the decision that, is made, especially a decision which has to do with finance, it affects everybody. So, on that note, we are going to look at, international news. What is happening? What is happening there, and to see especially regarding to current events in Africa. There's a lot of things which are happening, especially when you look at SADC and also the whole continent of Africa, and I think it's quite crucial it's quite crucial to look at what is happening. What is happening in Madagascar? It was indicated that in Madagascar, the soldiers have joined the protesters. The military unit have joined the protesters, people who are demonstrating, especially the Generation Z. And ongoing chaos happening. And also looking at the development, whether it's a coup happening, whether it's still a push to look at overtaking or to look at taking over government, because it was indicated that when you look at the presidency in Madagascar, the presidency has denounced the involvement of the military in protest. And when you look at what is happening, especially on international news, you'll be able to see that the military unit, especially the soldiers, have joined Generation Z, especially regarding the protests which have been going on over the shortage of water and electricity. And last week, President Andre Rajoelina spoke with the disgruntled group of people, especially when he invited around 1,500 people at his palace. But it was indicated that even though he looked at the discussion and also promised to resign after 1 year, he stated that protests still continuing in Madagascar. And we are yet to say what will happen the day of today. Is it a coup complete, or is the country still safe? Because the military stated that, and gave instruction, actually, especially the military unit that also assisted Rajoelina to take power years ago, also indicated that when it comes to other soldiers, they must not get instruction of shooting their friends and neighbors. And it's quite interesting to see. So to look at what is the future of Madagascar is going to look like. And also my question has always been here to say, looking at Rajoelina being the chairperson of SADC, how is SADC going to get involved if, the main person who was supposed to be in charge of solving conflict is also cornered? And also, how are we going to, and the question that we always need to ask ourselves is to say, why are people doing what they do? Why are these young people doing what they do? Are they influenced by, external forces? Is it really the situation which is worse, or there is other forces behind? But it's just a question of concern to look at that aspect. So let us look at this news and move forward.
Surreal scenes in the Malagasy capital Saturday as soldiers joined protesters marching against President Andry Rajoelina. The troops are from the same unit that helped Rajoelina take power for the first time 16 years ago following nationwide protests. They urged their comrades to disobey their commanders, prevent planes from leaving the territory, and for those who do not join us here at the camp, do not accept orders from your superiors to shoot at your people. Close your gates, stop listening to your superiors' orders, and wait for our instructions. We're simply responding to the call of the Malagasy people. After the gendarmerie's repression, we're trying to show the people that the army still exists. We are answering the people's call. There's no coup d'etat. What really makes me happy is that CAPSAT has declared its stance with the people and with the youth, and they have condemned the violence against the Malagasy people. In a statement, Madagascar's presidency denounced what it called an attempted coup and called on the military to defend the constitution. The protests, which were prompted by frustration over electricity and water cuts, have become the most important challenge yet to Rajoelina's rule.
That is what is happening. That is what is happening, especially in Madagascar. The military have joined the protest, but not every unit, and the president is denouncing it, and he's stating that the military must defend the constitution, and it's a bit of chaotic, events happening there, and also to see how the day is going to be today, especially regarding, Madagascar, the governance, and also the whole system. And when you see a soldier with an AK-47 joining the protest, understand that, it's no, civilian rule anymore in that area. And it's also a question of asking to say, who is coming to save the Africans, especially those who are suffering? Who is coming to save the Africans? Is military rule really the direction? Is it really the direction? Because in SADC have been known to have, a developing or an advancing democracy. But when you are looking at what is happening, when you look, for example, what almost happened in Mozambique, we look at Zimbabwe after Robert Mugabe.
Stop everything. These bargains that you save are too good to pass by. 2 1.5 kilo bags of real good frozen and mixed chicken portions, just 150 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Right Brand pasta, just 8.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Romy 40% fat spread, just 12.99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram U Brand frozen and mixed vegetables, just 36.99 Namibian dollars. 1 kilogram Top Score instant maize porridge, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. You save, I save, yes, we all save at You Save.
We are continuing with early morning scoop, and let us look at Botswana. It was stated that Botswana came up with a new mining laws, especially regarding mining, and also protection of local miners. And this law itself, it also promotes ownership of mining companies, and mining companies are required to sell 24% stake to government. Required to sell 24% stakes. It's quite interesting development. It's quite an interesting development. And also to see that Botswana is trying to take control of its mining industry. So you understand that when it comes to the proposal of owning stakes in Botswana's mineral resources, you'll be able also to see that previously there have been an ongoing discussion, especially between the government of Botswana and also the BS, especially when it coming to controlling and also ownership of stakes in diamond industry, which the proposal was standing at the government of Botswana to own 50% or more than 50% in their diamond industry. And it's quite a very interesting development, especially looking at the context that we are right now, where a lot of people are speaking about mineral beneficiation, addition of value, and also expanding control in terms of mineral resources. Because when you look at the report of natural resource governance which was contacted by the African Union, we'll be able also to realize that one of the proposal was capacitating SOEs and also for African government to make sure that they get control or they take control of their natural resources, because it was indicated that only 10 to 15% of minerals which are sent outside, Africa, which are sold or traded outside Africa, benefiting the local, benefiting Africa. It's only 10 to 15%, we'll be able now to see that who have been benefiting from these natural resources and what can be done moving forward. So let us look at this news and move forward.
Is a required to. The rule is a change to the Mines and Minerals Act, which previously gave the state the right to buy a 15% shareholding in any mining concession. Now companies are required to sell a 24% stake in new concessions to local investors if the government chooses not to buy. The Mines and Energy Ministry said the rule had taken effect on October 1st. Botswana, the world's top diamond producer by value, is keen to increase local ownership of its mineral wealth and to promote local value addition. With earnings from diamond sales hurt by weak demand and synthetic stones, the Southern African country has struggled to finance its budget. Revenues fell 50% in 2024.
Yeah, those are some of the new moves, especially when it comes to Botswana. You need to understand that in the world, when it comes to Botswana, in terms of diamond production, Botswana is number two in terms of diamond production, and they heavily depend on diamond. And when you look at countries which are producing minerals, and they depended more on the selling of raw materials, we'll be able to realize that when the price change, it also impacting the budget of the country. That's why you see a lot of development. You've also seen statements, especially from President Duma Boko, regarding ownership of diamond industry and also beneficiation of or mineral beneficiation. And also making sure that the people of Botswana, they benefit from their natural resources. And also expanding industries, because if you compare with Namibia, especially latest international trade balance statistics, when you look at uranium, for example, you'll be able to realize that although it has been leading in terms of the top five exported commodities in Namibia, you'll be able to realize that it has lost its first position, especially looking at the latest international trade balance statistics. Then you'll be able also to understand that once that commodity is no more needed or is no more in demand, it will affect your income heavily, and it will impact the way you collect your revenue, and also an ordinary person on the ground. That's why it has always been stated to say, when you look at issues of natural resources, value addition, expand your income. And also when it comes to value addition, you can also diversify to say, I'm not only getting money from raw materials, I'm not only getting money from final product, I'm also getting money through this financial service, I'm also getting money through the logistics of this and also other area. So yeah. The other news is also that there is an ongoing negotiations between Palestinians and also Israel, and it was stated that 10,000 of Palestinians are returning to the northern devastated Gaza. People are returning to their houses, and when you are looking at the situation, it's like we are returning to nothing. The buildings there become history. And you are just asking yourself to say, when it's coming to the people of Gaza or the Palestinian, when are they going to see real peace? Or is this going to be the end of conflict or the beginning of the end? Or is this war going to end completely? And looking at that aspect, let us look at this. Then we also look at China and the US when it comes to tariffs. Coming to tariffs and how are this going to affect the way we do things at home.
Tens of thousands of Palestinians begin returning Saturday the devastated northern Gaza Strip after a US-broken ceasefire came into effect. The truce has sparked new hope that the long war between Israel and Hamas might be winding down. Under its terms, all remaining hostages from the 7th of October attacks are expected to be released in the coming days. But major questions remain. Who will govern Gaza once Israeli troops begin pulling back? And will Hamas dismantle its arms? A key demand of President Donald Trump's ceasefire blueprint. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who once unilaterally ended a prior truce, has warned Israel may resume its offensive if Hamas doesn't surrender its arms. As borders reopen and people begin returning home, the fragile calm now hinges on implementation. The peace deal may be in motion, but the path ahead remains uncertain.
We are moving forward with early morning scoop. It's 24 minutes past the hour of seven. It's 24 minutes past the hour of seven. You can still engage us in the studio at 083-288-401. For your own information. The Villager newspaper, is out. Make sure that, you have access to the Villager newspaper so that, you'll be able to, have your content on, economic affairs. And, there's quite, interesting stories, especially when you look at, the Villager newspaper. When you look at, what, we are covering, especially that's why I'm always advising, especially if you are a researcher, if you are a student of agriculture economics, if you are a developmental enthusiast, if you are an academician, if you are interested in economics and development in Namibia, in SADC, and also in the continent of Africa and the whole world, you must be able to understand that the Villager newspaper must be part of your sources of information. That's why when you look on top of the Villager newspaper for today, you can be able to, see that, what is on top, of the paper is, 5.5 million to subsidize potato production. And it's coming to Ihakautu. It's coming to potatoes potatoes production in Namibia. It's becoming a priority. There is, subsidies there, which is, put on the table, must be able to, read and, expand your knowledge on that. And, when you are going to, page 3 of, the Villager newspaper, you can be able also to see, the application for 2026 application, at Velvicia University, at this Faculty of Law, Commerce and, Education. If you want to be a lawyer, you want to be an advocate one day, you want to be a magistrate, you want to be a judge, you want to protect the judicial system, you want to be a legal researcher, you want to be a corporate lawyer, you want to be a negotiator, you want to be a legal advisor, just that law field, must make sure that you approach University of Velvicia University, where you can be able to have a diploma in legal studies, level 6. You've also, honors, bachelor's of laws, honors. That is your LLB. That is your way to, become a legal practitioner. Either you are a criminal lawyer, you are a commercial lawyer, trade lawyer, a marriage lawyer, and many other sectors. That's why we are always indicating to people that, especially if you're interested in studying, look at, how you can expand within those fields. How you can expand within those fields, because it's not all the lawyers who are going to court. It's not all the lawyers who, are legal advisors, but there's a range of a lot of, fields that you can specialize in. You can become a diplomat even, in that sector. If you study law, you can specialize in international law, you can specialize in trade and others. But, make sure that you approach, Velvicia University. And, for more information, you can also look at, the Villager newspaper for today. Then, you can expand from there. Look at the application. Look at the deadline. Look at also application fees is put there. There's also a Bachelor's of Science in Project Management. We are always speaking about project management. We are always speaking about projects are incomplete. We are always speaking about the effectiveness of, implementing of certain projects. B PA champion of project management there. Then there is also a Bachelor of Science in Supply Chain Management. There's a Bachelor of Education, Senior Primary Education Honors, Mathematics and Science. You also have Bachelor of Education, specializing from grade 4 to 7. You have Bachelor of Education, again, Honors, Math and Science, grade 8 to 12. And yeah, expand. Studying must be priority number one, because we are always indicating to say, when it's coming to education, when it's coming to capacitate yourself, you must make sure that you are academically armed. You must also make sure that you become one of the human capitals. When people are speaking about Namibian human capital, where human capital can be able to bring about changes, because the reason of going to university, apart from having qualification, you are also learning how to be with people of multicultural environment. You are learning skills such as leadership, project management, and also dispute resolutions, because one way or the other, you cannot complete university or technical or college without entering into conflict and dispute resolution aspect, because we are dealing with human being, and it's a very important skill that you can learn, especially when you are dealing with people. Yeah, there is also article on how the potato grower anticipate 25 ton in December. It's quite very interesting. It's quite very interesting, especially when you look at economic expansion, when you look at how things are, when you look at global prediction, and also prediction from international financial institution. I was able to say that sub-Saharan Africa, where Namibia is part of, there is quite positive prediction in terms of economic growth. And that is why we are always asking to say, who is going to benefit from this? Who is going to benefit from this? And also, how can we take advantage of that situation of good prediction, of good prediction in terms of economic growth, and also in terms of expanding of the sector of the economy? And how is it going to affect also the human or individuals on the ground? You look at that article by Lois Ashimi, we'll be able to expand on that, especially to look at that projection. There's an article on Mitco. Mitco fulfill its 2025 beef export commitment to Norway. It's also Mitco. It's one of the conversation that we had quite some times, especially when it's coming to beef production, also trading of beef. And when you look at that aspect, you can be able also to expand your thinking in terms of that. There is an article on monetary policy effectiveness tested in Brazil. Look at that. And it's quite an analyzed article. Then looking at spot, also be able to look at the result of cricket Namibia. Look at that, especially what have happened on Saturday. And you can expand knowledge in terms of that, especially when it's coming to cricket. And you can only get this when you have access to the Villager newspaper. And we're always indicating to you that if you want access to the Villager newspaper, go to the Villager newspaper's page, go to Eagle FM page, share and like, and also send your name and save this number as a WhatsApp contact detail, 081-200-4144. So yeah, you can give your input at 083-288-401, 083-288-401. So let us look at the commercial break before we go to what is happening in terms of tariffs and how is trade war going, especially between China and the US. So it's, competition. These are very competitive economies, very competitive economies. And when you look at the relationship between China and the US in terms of trade, in terms of technology, in terms of, innovations, in terms of business development, you must be able to realize that these two countries have been competing for quite some time, especially when it's coming to the new industries, when it's coming to issues of innovation. Look at issues of softwares, issues of, online businesses. So, and China is a very competitive economy. Also going to look at what is happening there, especially looking at tariffs and also trade barriers.
Listen to Eagle FM in Lüderitz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104.0.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete okoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana kono ngeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore esatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ineko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
mm.
and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, looking at trade news, it was indicated that China has showed unhappiness, especially looking at Trump 100% tariff threat, and that is the Chinese government through its Ministry of Commerce said that the dispute between China and America should be resolved through negotiations, because President Trump indicated that he will impose 100% tariffs toward, Chinese products. And the Chinese Ministry of Commerce indicated that when it comes to the tariffs imposed to Chinese product, they have to be solved through negotiations. And the Chinese government has also indicated that it has called United States President Donald Trump's new tariffs on China goods hypocritical, as it defended its curbs on export on the rare earth elements and equipment. Because we must be able to understand that although things like this are happening, China and America, they are still they are trading partners, although they are competing. You must also be able to understand that even when you see countries are fighting, even when you see countries do not agree with each other, you look at, for example, the trade between Russia and also China. Still an ongoing trade, although they are also in disputes, especially regarding wars and influence in the world. But this is the news which is coming from China, getting that Trump is hypocrite, especially when it's coming to trade policy. But, let us look at this news and move forward.
And they did that. This is not something.
Let's listen to Donald Trump, especially when it's coming to the new threats of, tariffs, 100% tariffs to Beijing.
100%, you're talking about China might be 100%.
U.S. President Donald Trump threatening Beijing with a new tariff in November.
We were just surprised that China have a very good relationship with President Xi, and they did that. This is not something that I, instigated.
U.S. retaliation after China revealed its plan to impose export controls on all its products as of November 1st. Beijing processes the majority of the world's rare earths and critical minerals that go into everything from smartphones to electric vehicles, a key bargaining chip in the ongoing trade talks with the United States.
We get about 65% of our lithium ion batteries from China. So what we want to see here in the United States is getting that lithium in North America.
The souring trade relationship has Trump calling into question meeting with Xi at the APEC summit in 2 weeks.
The shock of a trade war.
A possible opening, Prime Minister Mark Carney may be looking to fill as Canada navigates trade wars with both countries.
I think he's a great prime minister.
Despite flattery in the Oval Office, Ottawa is still facing a 50% levy on aluminum, steel, and copper, a 35% tariff on roughly 15% of all Canadian goods that aren't free trade compliant, and a 35% duty on softwood lumber, set to increase on Tuesday.
As the president said, the negotiations are tough, but we've come a long way in the last year.
Canada has also been...
Yeah. We are moving forward. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. That is what is happening, especially between China and the United States of America, where the President of United States of America is imposing 100% tariffs toward Chinese products entering the U.S. market. You may be able to look at what are the statistics saying, as I have indicated to say, when it's coming to China and in the United States of America. These are still good trading partners. They have been fighting for quite some time, especially when it's coming to the economic aspect. But they are still good trading partners. When you look at, for example, the trade volume of goods between China and the U.S. in 2024 alone, it's approximately $660.7 billion U.S. dollars. Where the U.S. imported about, $438.9 billion worth of goods from China. And you must be able to also look at what is China selling to United States of America. You must look at issues of electronics. We talk about smartphones, talk about computer, talk about lithium-ion batteries, talk about machineries. Be able also to realize that when it's coming to these two countries, the trade volume of the product that they sell to each other is quite huge, and this 100% tariffs imposition will cause a little bit of chaos. Is it is going to be continuation of threats, or is going to be something that the U.S. want China to back down or to weaken Chinese economy? Or is part of competition. And also, what is the role of World Trade Organization saying? What is the role of World Trade Organization? What is World Trade Organization saying about these issues? Because in terms of trading, you must have two traders or three, and you also must have a referee. When it comes to trade agreement, especially on international trade, they must be done, and they must also be overseen, or they must be monitored by World Trade Organization. Because like in football, in trade, you must have a referee who is also dealing with trade disputes. And it also bringing us to the point of asking to say, what are some of the strengths of these international institutions? What is the strength of international institutions when somebody go to International Court of Justice, for example, and lay a complaint, especially a small country? How is it going to be assisted? Are the decision made by international institutions neutral, or are they only protecting some countries? When the US or China or Russia break certain international trade laws, what are the punishment from World Trade Organizations? When we have seen the other time, just a decision in Niger, to make sure that they protect their minerals, or they stop selling of raw materials outside. We have seen already the decision of World Bank arbitration court to indicate that if Niger, what it has done, especially stopping of foreign companies to sell raw materials, was indicated that there was indication to stop trading, with Niger, or Niger was stopped to sell those minerals that it has seized because of the complaint from international companies that were working in that country. Must we also be able to realize that when it's coming to international trade laws, who has power, and also which countries have influence? So, ladies and gentlemen, you can engage us in the studio at 083-288-401. Those of you are coming on the radio for the first time, this is Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And we are going until the hour of 8. We are speaking about economic affairs. We are speaking about global affairs. And like moving forward, every Monday and also every Friday, we'll be joined by Kanjeo Kankwanyoka, especially when it's coming to unpacking of economic affairs. And looking at what we've discussed today, going to summarize a little bit of what we've talked about, especially when it's coming to payroll deduction system, who is going to benefit from this. Removal of payroll deduction management system, and also what are the numbers saying. And we are going to look at that report again, looking at the statistics, and also to see what are the employees of public service are saying, and also what is the public saying about this deduction system, and also to look at what is the position of micro lenders in Namibia. Because, I was so shocked. Hello?
Yes, David.
Yes, sir, how are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, how is the Monday?
Thank you, how are you?
I know it's well.
Wonderful.
Mm.
Yes, the issue of, it's very important that if there are those opportunities presenting themselves, it's good that we really leverage on them.
Mm.
Yeah, but the issue of tariff that the US and all China and others are doing, I know that they are harming us somehow. But maybe that's where those areas where we need to take an opportunity If, for example, the things, the products, or whatever we will get from US, whether it goes there, because I know those things are between China now and things like that, but I think the effect, the triple effect might also be felt here. And I know if that is the case, maybe we just need to craft up some ideas and then make sure that that gap is filled. So I 2 days ago, I was listening to a speech of one of your friends from Botswana. He's talking about possible complementarity. So I know you are familiar with that word. And they are saying that if, for example, these two countries, Botswana and Namibia, now working together, and if there is a gap experience, that means Namibia should come in and fill that gap. If it is the gap is in Botswana, this economic gaps and all these other things, so Namibia, Botswana should then come. In fact, each country should come in to complement each other efforts. So even if it's diamonds, people usually say, hey, diamond, hey, this one, Botswana is, you know. So I think it's very important that we also take up those opportunities. Because the development, economic development or growth, well, once you discover that there are some, areas, weakness.
Because, you know, somebody may also want to ask to say, how did we evaluate our bilateral agreement? Because when you're looking, when you're looking at that context, for example, to say, let us put on the scale, during the time of, our late, Geingob, and, also, during the time of, Masisi. In Botswana, then let us look at that context to say, between 2018 and 2024, for example, how did what did Namibia and Botswana achieve in that? Have you ever come to the point of evaluating to say, yes, this is our bilateral relations, and also this is what we have done so far. These are some of the changes. Because if you are just saying we are going to play a complementary role. That is a political side of it, but at the practical level, what have we done differently?
Maybe they evaluated and they discovered that there are those gaps there that they need now to be filled. So that's, I think that one actually came out from the evaluation. They were looking at their performances. They are looking at how they have worked together. And, you know, then they are saying that those political statement that you are talking about must be translated into action. And that's what you are saying. Translated into action. It's no longer up of talking and all these other things, but it's action now. So maybe they might have evaluated those their performances during the time that you were referring to, and now that's hence they came up with now with this some of this strategy to seriously create some alliance on working together to address those economic gaps that they have discovered, and apparently even their population is almost similar.
Population does not matter. What I'm concerned about is the impact of that the relationship, because we have, for example, we have a relationship with Angola, for example, and it's quite a very important relationship. But the question can always come to say, as much as we love Angola so much, Angola is our sister country, and we share common history many years ago, and also cultural history together. But can we really come on the table and look at how is our trade relation with Angola? What are we buying from Angola apart from I want to come at that context to say, how can we strengthen also our bilateral relations with other countries?
Yeah, maybe the bilateral agreement, you know, this technical agreement and others.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that, yes, the population does matter, but it does matter.
Mm.
Because if you do not, I was also listening to somebody here in this, and then a person was doing an interview and he said, yeah, he's doing a business here.
Yeah.
And she's now comparing our population in South Africa.
Yeah.
The buying power, processing power,
mm.
is very important when it comes to economy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to the population.
Yeah.
Because if you have a very small population,
mm.
I'd rather. So to really put your effort there and all these things, the economic growth,
mm.
is somehow impaired. So if your population is too small, or let's say Angola, they have got a bigger population as compared to us.
Mm.
But maybe because of their infrastructure.
You know, DRC has a population of more than 100 million, but they are still a lower income country. Why are they not improving?
This one is saved by the war. And we remember our war, which was fought from there.
Yeah.
So that's how
they have
a lot of infrastructure, and they are low, their legal framework. So when you look at the constitution,
we have a few minutes before we go.
But I think it's fine. I can end up here. All what you are saying is that let's use that complementary.
Yeah.
Let's do complementarities and see how we can complement each other, and cross those gaps that are. Existing.
Thank you.
In the emerging market.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah, 56 minutes past the hour of 7. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop. And looking at the aspect of population, yes, population can play a role in development, in economic development, and also human development, especially when it's coming to buying power. But if you have a fragmented society, if you have a fragmented society where that of who own the means of production is few people, it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be very difficult for you to develop, because had it been based on population, countries such as Nigeria, countries such as DRC would be somewhere, because on top of population, you need good policies. You also need people to actively participate in the economy, either through business or working, and also to make sure that your human capital are well managed. But yeah, thank you for the contribution. But just to summarize on our discussion for today, based on Nationwide Online Survey on Namibian government employees' perception and satisfaction with payroll deduction system, we're able to see that these results. We are also asking to see what motivated the proposal of Namibian government to also propose the ending of this system. Because what is interesting is that this system is what is connecting those, especially low earners in government, to also micro lenders and also to get their assistance. And what is very interesting about the system is that it also gives calculations to say, you can only take this money from the payslip until this level, so that there is also protection of those who are given, you know, finance. And what is very interesting is also that with the direct deduction system, it's also giving a guarantee to a micro lender that is, that is the only guarantee that is giving from the side of a micro lender that you're going to pay at the end of the month. And what you have also looked at is the aspect of saying, what is the role of microlenders in development? Because looking at the economy that we are now, a person can be working at a certain age where responsibility can, overweigh the types of money that this person is getting. And the only way to supplement his salary, the only way to supplement his income is through loans to solve other problems. But when it comes to the situation where, microlenders also run away from these people because there's no guarantee that I'm going to take money from your account. And it's a quite debatable conversation. But looking at what is being proposed and what people are saying, because we are always speaking about research and data, because if a decision is made, the question is always asked to say, who is influencing that decision? And also, are the people consulted? Because you can't pass a policy which 80% of the people are not happy with. Who are you doing it for? Because those are some of the things. And also the thing of saying, let us only not complaining about issues online. When you see statistics are coming on Facebook, on Twitter, or wherever, let us also be part of consultations. Because there's always an aspect of consulting the public before a certain policy is being made. Let us use that platform as citizens to make sure that we influence those outcomes. Yeah, I'm going to leave you the good hands of Michael Shoveri to unpack the day. From me, David Shombe, and also on behalf of Kanjoka Mkwanyoka, who always be joining us every Monday and Friday. We are saying bye-bye for now, and see you around.
The early bird catches the worms. That's right. Tune in to Early Morning Scoop with David Shombe, where he unpacks global affairs, analyze issues, dive into the aspects of human development, connecting policymakers with the citizens, and encouraging critical, constructive, and positive criticism Monday to Friday from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. Don't miss out.
Eagle FM, the eye.